Please silence all electronic devices.
To be honest with you, I don't think it has any impact on that. What it does have an impact and does concern me is the integrity that voters have in the voting system, and that's for Republicans and Democrats.
As you say, it could even cost us a seat in Congress. Yes, extend it as long as it takes to get this extended to the end of the year, if that's what it takes to get this thing right.
Any further discussion or debate?
Welcome back again to the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. It is a Friday. That, of course, means it's time to check in with Becky and Rob. Rob Schofield, NC Policy Watch, Becky Gray, John Locke Foundation, here to help us review some of what happened this week in North Carolina politics. Hey there.
Hey there.
Hey, guys.
Happy Friday.
We're recording Friday morning. Postmaster General and Greensboro resident Louis DeJoy is embroiled in a national controversy. An article in the Washington Post from last weekend alleges that while in the private sector, DeJoy pressured employees to make political contributions and that those workers were later reimbursed through bonuses. The piece cites five former employees of DeJoy. If true, this would violate state and federal campaign finance laws. Calls for DeJoy to step down are growing. The United States Postal Service Board of Governors is standing by him for now. Becky, in terms of GOP candidates here in North Carolina, would it be best for him to resign?
Well, I think the key phrase that you used here, Jeff, was if true. And I think that, you know, any kind of allegations, and these are serious allegations, we need to look at it. There needs to be an investigation. I think that if the allegations are true, then yes, I think that he should step down. But we're a ways away from that. And I think particularly, you know, as we move towards the election in this very volatile environment that we're in, I think that there's a real tendency to where if there's any kind of an accusation, you know, there are those who tend to jump to conclusions and demand action that may or may not be warranted. So I think the key phrase in this is if true, but I also think that it does warrant an investigation. He has said so far that there's nothing to this. You know, again, I think there needs to be an investigation on it.
So let me, just before we get to Rob real quick, I want to ask you this follow-up, because in terms of, you know, the letter of the law and finding somebody guilty before, I mean, it's innocent until proven guilty, right? But in terms of us being whatever we are here, 7.5, 8 weeks until an election, do you think that it would be in the best interest of Tom Tillis on down to Republican legislative candidates for this not to be a topic of conversation? Would it be in their best interests for DeJoy to not really be part of the campaign picture, so to speak?
To be honest with you, I don't think it has any impact on that. What it does have an impact and does concern me is the integrity that voters have in the voting system, and that's for Republicans and Democrats. To be honest with you, I haven't seen this as a campaign issue. My advice to GOP candidates would be to, you know, call for an investigation. And again, you know, Jeff, as you mentioned, you're innocent until proven guilty. And but, you know, this doesn't have anything to do with Tom Tillis's election to Senate or to, you know, any of the candidates in North Carolina.
Well, it seems to me it would make sense for him at least to step aside if he doesn't officially resign. I mean, when you're the subject of a serious investigation, and this is criminal stuff we're talking about here, it seems logical enough to me for a high public official like this, especially at a time like this. I think it'd be better for the Republicans. Democrats are probably hoping he sticks around because he's going to be a punching bag that they can beat up on. It's an obviously another black eye for North Carolina. And it's, you know, there's been a lot of stories, not just about DeJoy and this potential illegal campaign contributions, which several of his former employees went on the record about and talked to the media about. But there's been a series of stories. AP had a long story about the way DeJoy has made contributions. Both he and his wife, Aldona Vosh, have directed contributions that then end up benefiting their family. It was a remarkable story about the fact that they gave several $100,000 to Duke University's athletic program. And then lo and behold, right away, their son, who was a middling at best tennis player, all of a sudden was a walk-on on a nationally ranked national tennis team and had a very unsuccessful career while he was doing that. It was, you know, pretty darn clear that what was happening there was that they were buying influence. And it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But when you're talking about someone who's a high public official like this, for whom has a record of taking controversial and questionable stances on the election, I think it would make most sense for him and for everybody involved for him to just step aside and let some people who are beyond, whose integrity is beyond repute, to come in and run things through the end of the year.
Well, and, you know, during this campaign season, you know, we're seeing other accusations of other candidates across the country. And Louis DeJoy is not a candidate. Let me clarify that. But, you know, for some of these elected officials. And so I think we just need to be really careful with this and not jump to conclusions. And, you know, again, I think an investigation is warranted. And, you know, if these allegations are true, then then we're talking about a whole different ballgame.
But, of course, we must say that a legitimate investigation likely not going to be over before the election. And so my point is simply that the election, the integrity of it, making it beyond question is more important than the, you know, any one individual. And you know, he won't be harmed if he steps aside. If he's proven to be innocent, he can come back in the job. I think he would do everyone a service by stepping aside, at least for the time being.
I understand Rob's point, but I just would add, too, that these allegations don't have anything to do with, aside from a character profile, they don't have anything to do with the ability of him to run the post office and the postal service, and, you know, particularly this close to the election. I mean, I don't think there's any of these allegations that would say that he is unqualified or incompetent to do this job.
Well, but they'd show that he's a criminal. I mean, if someone has violated the law, violated statutes like that, they're clearly not in a position to run the office.
But we don't know that now.
All right, let's move on. Yesterday on Capitol Hill, Stacey Carliss, who's the head of the nonprofit NC Counts Coalition, told the Congressional Committee that North Carolina is on the verge of a failed 2020 census operation. This could mean billions of dollars lost in federal aid and could even result in the state not getting an additional 14th seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. Carliss, among others, is calling for an extension of 1 month to the census count here. Is that the best option? Rob?
I think at a minimum. Obviously, the point of the census is to get it right. We're right now, I think the number that she quoted is that we've only had 61.4% of North Carolina households that have self-responded. We're well below the national average. We're well behind where we were in 2010. It's no doubt in part a function of the fact that the Trump administration has gone out of its way to try to undermine the census. And it's going to have a big effect here. I think the report I saw from Washington was we lose $99 million per year with just a 1% undercount in terms of federal funding. So this is literally billions of dollars at stake in federal money that comes into the state. As you say, it could even cost us a seat in Congress. Yes, extend it as long as it takes to get this extended to the end of the year, if that's what it takes to get this thing right.
I agree with most of Rob's points. I think that another huge factor in this is the pandemic. And, you know, people just have their minds on other things, to be quite honest with you. So I think if there's one thing that we can get across today, it's how important these census numbers are. And just some examples of some of the funding that's attached to those census numbers that would be North Carolina's share of federal funding. It goes for things like Medicaid, like Section 8 housing, for the SNAP program, many education programs in North Carolina, you know, depending on the students that we have and the households that we have in North Carolina. And then last but not least, certainly, is highway planning and construction. So, you know, I mean, these are really important things that North Carolina depends on that we need, and our share of that money is dependent on how many households we have. And so how we report that is incredibly important. And as both of you have mentioned, also, you know, with the increase in population in North Carolina, we are likely eligible for another congressional seats. That means that North Carolinians are more represented in Washington for not just the funding decisions, but lots of other decisions as well. I have filled out my census form. I did it several months ago. I'm telling you, literally, it took me under 5 minutes to do it. And it doesn't ask you any of those invasive questions or, you know, things that you would feel like were invading your privacy. It's easy, it's quick, and Rob, I think you mentioned when we were talking that you have filled yours out too. So, you know, those of our regular listeners to the show know that Rob and I don't always agree on everything, but I think this is one issue that we do agree on, and I certainly encourage everybody listening to, if you have not filled out your census form, to do it. It's really important.
Well, I'll just say that the only other thing we need to reiterate again is that it's You know, it's not just an individual thing, and it's not just the people who listen to NPR. There are a lot of people out there in North Carolina, people who are in rural communities, people who are in living in poverty, who, yes, right, are worried about the pandemic. But we need an assertive, affirmative effort by public officials to make this happen. It's not going to happen on its own by just sending it out in the mail. We need, and it's really tough to do right now because of the pandemic, so we need much more of an effort. We need an extension, and we need the Trump administration to stop trying to undermine the darn thing by sending thinly veiled messages to undocumented people and things like that, immigrants. We need to get serious about this thing, or it's really going to cost everybody.
Labor Day, rearview mirror, early next week, the first scheduled U.S. Senate debate between Republican incumbent Tom Tillis and Democratic challenger Cal Cunningham. This is, reminder, viewed as one of the most competitive races in the nation, a toss-up by many accounts, lots of money, TV ads, mailers. How can each of these major party candidates make a final push and try to distinguish himself in the upcoming forum?
Well, you know, I think the two candidates need to present themselves, their ideas of what they will bring to Washington, how they would best represent the state of North Carolina. I mean, I just think they both need to make their cases. Now, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that both of the candidates have committed to three debates. Tom Tillis is calling for an additional two. Cal Cunningham has not yet agreed to that, but it's not just the one debate that will be on September 14th. We'll have an opportunity to hear from these candidates on at least three different occasions. And I'll tell you, from somebody who is just feeling inundated and overwhelmed by the negative ads on both sides of this campaign that you're seeing on television, a lot of the misinformation or very biased information that is being distributed by both campaigns, I'm looking forward to a face-to-face, asking questions, getting those answers in a debate, so we can kind of cut through some of this stuff and people can see, you know, really and truly what these candidates both stand for. And I think it's a very valuable service. And I think that in my view, this is what I listen to, and this is how I formulate my decision about who I'm going to vote for, are things like the debates. I think it's a valuable part of this campaign.
I'm actually less optimistic about the debates. My experience in watching these things in the past and seeing how they've impacted the outcome of these kinds of races is, I don't think they have much of an effect. I don't think they have very big ratings. I don't think a lot of people pay a lot of attention to them. Tom Tillis is in a really tough spot because the big conundrum of this whole race is the fact that he knows in his heart that Donald Trump is a charlatan and a liar, and he doesn't have the courage to take him on. And yet the right, his base, distrusts him because they don't think he really is completely loyal to Trump. So he's in this really difficult tightrope walk that he's involved in. And he's got this guy on the other side who's kind of this squeaky clean, ex-military, middle of the road, boring Democrat. It's a tough person. He can't really lay a glove on him. And so it's going to be a really challenging debate for Tillis, I think, in particular. I think Cunningham's just going to kind of bob and weave and stay where he's been. And it'll be interesting to see whether Tillis can have any success in ultimately bringing the Republican base back to him. It seems maybe that in recent polls that they are coming back to him a little bit. It's a very close race, but I think Tillis still remains. There's a reason he's one of the most vulnerable senators in the country this fall, and that has to do with the fact that the Donald Trump problem continues to plague him.
Becky, as you noted, this is the first of three scheduled debates. More are possible, but I would I'd be a little bit surprised if they do meet more than three occasions here moving forward.
You know,
we're
just kind of running out of time, too. I mean, it's, what, 7.5 weeks until the election? Early voting starts on October 15th. A lot of people, looking at social media, a lot of people have mailed in their mail-in ballots already. So, we're just kind of running out of time with this as well.
Becky Gray is Senior Vice President at the John Locke Foundation. Rob Schofield is Director of NC Policy Watch. Enjoy your weekends.
Thanks. Have a great weekend.
Take care, guys.
Don't forget, a truncated version of The Week in State Politics can be found on that good old radio, 450 Friday afternoons during All Things Considered on WUNC. Station also has a couple of real good podcasts that you should check out as well. Don't forget to search for Tested as you look for on-demand programs to get locked into. For Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff. Hope you enjoy your weekend. We will talk to you again soon.
W.
N.
N.
C.
C.
Bye.
Bye.